Well,
New York, LA, New Orleans, San Diego. What are you doing to me?
Honey, I'm like Carmen Sandiego. Where in the world am I? Okay? Truly.
Where in the world is Joey Taranto?
Oh, good work. Solid work there.
And welcome to I Think Not, the podcast where Ellen, me, I am always in the same place, and you never know where old Blue Eyes over there is going to be. We are your true crime podcast that recaps all of your favorite true crime TV shows. And my love, tell them why you're in San Diego.
I was going to say, you can't just say I'm in San Diego and not give any additional information. Yeah, so yesterday, you know, with these wildfires in California and Los Angeles, I am just not going to wait around to see how this turns out. And the air quality was bad, so around noon yesterday, I'm like, pack it up, Edie and Tucker, we're getting the fuck out of here. And we got in a car and we drove to San Diego.
Yeah, and Joey and I had a previously scheduled phone meeting, and Joey's in the car, I'm on the train, Lola has norovirus, his cats are screaming, we're on this important call, we are just two. Hello, can you hear me? Mom! Hi, how are you? We're business people.
The 504 will arrive at 5:10 on platform. Good luck.
But we hope wherever you are safe. If you are in California, of course, I am from Northern California and Joey lives in Southern California. We hope you are safe. We hope you are okay. The world is watching, and my goodness, those brave firefighters, everyone out there helping. It is just, it's crazy. But I'm so glad you followed your gut, Bib, and you just got the heck out of there.
Yeah, baby. I don't mess around. Like I said on my Instagram story, I had my father's voice in my head, because if there was a whisper of a hurricane growing up, my dad was like, we out of here. Let's go.
Yeah.
I'm not messing around with that shit.
But Joey brought his recording equipment all the way to San Diego because we are not going to leave our DB community without an episode this week. And we are starting a whole new show recommended by you. That is right. We take all of your recommendations. We write them down. We take a poll. We see what we like. And we landed for our next four episodes, Killer in Plain Sight. You can find it on Hulu and Apple. And I don't know, you can probably get it for free somewhere. I don't know. But it's a great show. And if you want more than just what is here on the regular feed, tell them what they can do, Joseph.
Well, you can head over to patreon.com/ithinknot, where you can find, for as little as $5, tons of our back catalog. I'm talking a who's who and a what's what of true crime. We have covered it all. We literally have a back catalog of, I want to say, 12,574 back episodes. Is that right, Ellen?
Yeah, that's sounds about right. So the minute you sign up, you can download and binge all of those, as well as take advantage of all our special programming. But at the $5 level, you're going to get four bonus episodes. And one of those episodes includes our true crime adjacent show, which was Love After Lockup. And we are currently covering The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. And it is the secret love of Joey's life. Don't let him tell you otherwise. But no matter where you fall there, we're always going to be here on Wednesdays on your general feed. And we're just so happy that you're here.
Shall we jump into the episode, Little Yellin' Mosh?
Yes. So there are two seasons of Killer in Plain Sight, and we're going to start right at the tip top with season one, episode one, Homicidal Secrets.
Sherry Rasmussen is living the perfect life.
Sherry is young, she's just married, she's in love, and she's very happy.
But all the happiness in the world won't be able to save Sherry this morning.
A cornered burglar is a very dangerous person. He will do anything to escape.
You have to admire Sherry's spirit. She was not going down without a fight.
Even Sherry couldn't beat a bullet.
Say before we jump into the episode, this show is only half an hour long. And when we first chose it, we were like, oh, that just doesn't seem like a lot. But I like it because sometimes in the longer episodes, they pad it, repeat things, things we don't need. Y'all, this is going to be 30 minutes of jam-packed information the whole time. So don't let the time fool you. This is a great show.
It is February 24th, 1986, and we are in Van Nuys, California.
Okay, babe, we haven't done this for a really long time.
We know everything that happened in 1986.
Do you know what the number one song was in 1986?
Is it Take My Breath Away?
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. Sure.
I don't think we've done that one, babe.
It's a great song.
Dionne Warwick, Gladys Knight, Elton John, and Stevie Wonder. Can I tell you a really, really quick funny story?
Oh, Jesus. What?
Elton John wasn't supposed to be in it. It was Luther Vandross. And Dionne Warwick ran into Elton John at the grocery store. And she was like, hey, Elton John, you know what? You'd be so good on this. And we need someone to play the piano. Can you come tomorrow and record this epic song? And he said yes. Come on. You did not know that story.
I did not know that story.
All right, you're welcome. Sorry, we haven't done that for a long time. Keep going with your story.
On the evening of February 24th, 1986, John Rutten returns home from work in Van Nuys, California.
Now, I don't know how old John is supposed to be, but reenactment John looks like a 17-year-old kid in his dad's suit starring in a How to Succeed at the local high school. This kid is 120 pounds and looks like he's skateboarded to set. This kid looks like his theme song is... This kid looks like his Google search history consists of Bitcoin conspiracy theories, used Teslas, and boobs. This is no married man.
You're so right. A lot of people asked us to cover this show specifically for the reenactments, and you're going to get what you asked for. This 17-year-old is playing the action of looking very confused. Like, oh dear, I'm so confused. So poor reenactment John is given the oh dear face and walks into the house. Now, Maureen McConnell is here. She's a former FBI agent, and she explains everything in the house is in disarray. And of course, by reenactment standards, disarray means a knocked over lamp and a knocked over stool. But then Maureen says,
there's broken pottery on the ground.
Now look, you can knock over my lamp, uh-huh. You can knock over my stool, mm-hmm. But do not fuck with my earthware pottery. How dare you, sir? Not pottery on the ground.
Who fucked with my paper mache Buddha? I made that today in class.
I made that at a Color Me Mine one day on a rainy day.
Is that my Lego palm tree? I am upset. You know, they make Lego anything. You can make like a Lego toilet. You know, of course, all I could hear is ransacked. The place was ransacked. He sees this house in disarray. He looks up at the alarm system where the panic button is, and to the right of it, there's bloody handprints on the wall. That poor man, that would stop anyone's heart in that moment.
So then we're told, after he finds that devastating handprint, he doesn't know what's going on. John looks on the floor and finds that his wife, Sherry, is there, and she is clearly deceased. Now, in the reenactment, I understand this is 1986 and they're trying to be historically accurate. But this poor man uses a rotary phone.
Yes.
Circa 1953.
Uh-huh.
We had cordless phones in 1986. We had push-button phones. How do we look historically accurate? I don't know. Rotary phone, mayhaps?
Maybe it was a family heirloom. Yeah, let's go with that.
It's hard to do the, you know, because from the 9 to 9, it's like, and then you have that creak, creak for the 1.
Yes.
But police come and they find a devastated John with his deceased wife, Sherry.
So John gets on the phone with 911. He can barely talk. The operator is asking him, like, what's happening? But this man is in utter shock. He cannot articulate what's happening. Well, the police arrive and they know for sure there's been a struggle here. And whatever happened to Sherry, she put up a fight.
Mm-hmm. And John explains to them that the last time he saw her was when he left for work in the morning. That's all he knows. So now we get a little backstory on Sherry Rasmussen.
Sherry Rasmussen was born on February 7th, 1957, and was just 29 years old when she died.
She was a very smart kid. She entered college at age 16. She went straight into nursing, and she loved it.
She was so smart. Now, of course, in all of these shows, there has to be a reenactment of Sherry in the hospital. You all, I know this is why you all recommended this show, because this, quote, hospital is literally the floor of an empty office. There's like a telephone, a laptop, which is funny because we were just using rotary phones in the scene before. And they have these like built-in shelves at the desk. And each shelf just has, boop, one piece of paper. Just one in all the... boop, just one little paper. Joey, I don't know if you noticed this. On the counter with the single pieces of paper was just a row of arbitrary rubber ducks.
What? No, I did not notice that, but you notice all that shit.
Five rubber ducks. I know. This is why you all sent this show to us, but it's just pieces of paper, a laptop, and five rubber duckies. They were like, this makes it look fun.
This looks like a hospital in the 80s. I mean, hospitals in the 80s where you could smoke cigarettes in the waiting room. Don't believe me? Go watch Steel Magnolias.
Joey, I have something to tell you.
What?
This episode is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first bake from frozen subscription box for artisanal breads, pastries, and pastas, and we are in a committed relationship.
Here's what's great about Wild Grain. Their boxes are fully customizable to your taste and your dietary restrictions. In addition to their classic variety box, they also just launched a new gluten-free box and a plant-based box that is 100% vegan. Whatever you're after, Wild Grain has it, and they make it delicious.
You can taste the difference. It is absolutely hassle-free. Everything goes from frozen to baked and warm on your table or in your mouth in 25 minutes or less. No mess, no cleanup, and you can take the credit for this delicious artisanal bread, but they also have these pastas, and their croissants are amazing and flaky and lovely. I cannot say enough amazing things about Wild Grain. I love it. Whenever my delivery comes, I just fill up my freezer and I bake accordingly.
So are you ready to bring all your favorite carbs right to your doorstep?
Yes.
Well, be sure to check out Wild Grain so you can begin building your own box of artisanal breads, pastas, and pastries.
For a limited time, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off the first box plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/think to start your subscription.
You heard, Ellen. Free croissants in every box. And $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/think.
That's wildgrain.com/think, or you can use promo code THINK at checkout. But whatever you do, say wah.
Normally in the mornings, Sherry was the one out of the door before her husband, John, but she was working on a presentation for work that day, and so she was staying home. That reminds me, I have a presentation for you I've been working on. I should do that now. Now's fine, right?
Yeah, what is it, Bim?
Okay, hit the lights. Welcome to the presentation of Reasons Why Ellen is a Cunt. This will only take 12 hours. No food or drinks, please. And now that it's midnight here in San Diego, I've gotten to our last reason why Ellen is a cunt. She was born. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
That was a really great presentation. And the fact you finally learned PowerPoint, my love, it's really great. Joey will be executing our next live show all by himself.
Are you kidding me? I did all kinds of shit on PowerPoint. It's Riverside, I can't be.
John tells police he called Sherry several times during the day, but he never got an answer. His calls to the office also went unanswered.
So we learn that John tells police that, you know, I actually called Sherry on the rotary phone. Don't worry, they have a rotary phone again at his work several times that day, but never got an answer. And he says, I called her at home. I even called her at work, even though I knew she wasn't there, and yes, still received no answer. And now we get a little backstory on how Sherry and John met and fell in love.
Well, John and Sherry met at a house party in 1984 and immediately hit it off. Remember meeting people in real life? Like, I feel like everyone does that on apps now. I do my best work in real life. I will go up to someone at a bar and be like, hey, what's up? You're cute. What's your name? And people nowadays do not know how to receive that.
They don't know how to talk to each other or say, like, do you want to go out sometime? Like, when people tell me that they met at a house party, I'm like, what? Because the only house parties I go to have just a gaggle of gays at them. So what house parties are you all going to?
It's true. What do you think your pickup line would be? Pick me up. Let's be at a bar.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm just drinking this Sex on the Beach. What about you?
Hot. I'm just having this Schlitz malt liquor.
Cool. What do you say you make like Magnum PI and investigate my vagina? Needs a little deep investigation.
Wow. You're so hot. Wow. That was smooth. You know, I'm pretty good at algebra.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I could be your ex so you don't have to figure out why.
Maybe this is why I'm single. Okay, I'll just do what I do best. I'm just gonna do me. Ready? Let's try one more time. Ready?
Hey.
Hey.
Wanna fuck?
Okay, you know what? Well, Sherry and John met in IRL. They quickly moved in together. They got married November 23rd, 1985. And we see a picture of their wedding. You know what I'm sure she had, Joey?
Waterfall flowers.
Waterfall flowers.
A white limo and waterfall flowers.
It had to have been, because that's the most divine thing you could do is waterfall flowers. And so if you're not good at math like me, that's only 4 months later. And what's strange to everyone is they seem genuinely really happy. So going to the crime scene, the police find a pile of electronics at the base of the stairwell. And of course, we see a picture of the crime scene. There's a VCR and a CD player. Ah, CD player. Gather around the campfire, children. Back in the days of yesteryear, we had a flat, round piece of plastic that stored and played all of our music. Well, just about 80 minutes worth. And that was called a compact disc, and we shortened that to a CD. It revolutionized the way we listened to music. We thought we were living in the future, children, but you had to be very careful because if you breathed on it wrong, it would scratch and just play. How will I know? Oh, 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 oh. That's right, children. We would scour Tower Records or Sam Goody for the perfect CD and get home and see the little pamphlet with the lyrics and promo pictures. And even if you just wanted that album for one song, you had to buy the entire compact disc. What a time to be alive, children. And they were so bulky, too.
They really were.
There had been a string of burglaries in the area recently, but none of them involved violence. And police believed that this burglary would have gone off without a hitch. If only Sherry had gone to work that day.
So here's the thing. At this point, the cops are thinking perhaps Sherry interrupted a burglary, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what's really upsetting is Sherry had been shot in the chest 3 times. And they also found a blanket near Sherry with 3 bullet holes in it. And it appeared that the murderer had used this blanket to try and muffle the sounds of the gunshot.
Yeah. And they went as far to say that any one of those shots by themselves would have been fatal. So this was at very close range, and it was very specific. She also had a series of cuts and bruises around her face. Not in the episode, she also had loads of other defensive wounds. So they think because of this cut on her head and the broken pottery that the burglar slash murderer probably used a vase to hit her over the head at some point. So all of this indicated that Sherry definitely fought for her life. There was a massive struggle.
They also found a bite mark on her forearm. Mm-hmm. And whoever did this bit her really hard. And what's wild is that the only thing missing from Sherry and John's house is their wedding certificate. Now listen, yes, all of this indicates a burglary gone wrong. But of course, investigators are like, listen, we've been down this road before. Her husband John was the last person to see her alive. We have to dig into this. We have to investigate more.
Of course. And they check into John's alibi, and all of his coworkers and everyone at his office was like, nope, John was here the whole day. He was acting normal. There was absolutely nothing out of the ordinary. And then the police realized that just a couple days after Sherry's tragic murder, 2 men robbed another woman at gunpoint. Now, thank goodness she was not harmed, but this was really close to John's home. So they're like, okay, so maybe this was a burglary gone wrong and Sherry was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so the police continue to follow every lead that they get.
That is until Sherry's dad, Nels, appeared and he was like, I got something to say and y'all need to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I think y'all are backing the wrong horse here because this burglary gone wrong theory, no. Have y'all looked into my son-in-law, John? He is acting very fucking sus. He didn't tell me how my daughter died. I had to find that out from someone else. And since her death, this man won't take any of my calls. Like, he's absolutely avoiding me. And police are like, look, grief makes people act strange. strangely. They can become avoidant or reclusive. And Papa Nels was like, oh yeah, well, did he tell you about the dick move he made with my daughter? And it turns out there's a story there.
Yeah, one of the investigators says this.
It seems that his daughter wasn't the only woman who drew her husband's attention.
Probably the nicest way I have ever heard someone call someone a potential cheater. Like,
yeah,
this guy was meeting the milkman, if you know what I mean. He was dipping his wick in someone else's candle wax. Joey, guess what?
What?
Zbiotics is back. You all, Zbiotics is a pre-alcohol probiotic. If you're getting up there in the years, like me and old Blue Eyes over there, you're going to want to listen to this.
How dare you? Okay, here's how Zbiotics works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. And it's that byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your very rough next day. So what pre-alcohol does is it produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. I like to go out and have a couple drinks on the weekend, right? I'm not trying to rage against the machine. I just want to feel a little loose and tender. So what I do is I always remember to make my pre-alcohol drink my first drink of the night. And of course, I drink responsibly, but it helps me to feel my best the next day. It really does work.
Well, that's because it was engineered by a team of PhD microbiologists. You know, kind of like us, Joey.
Yeah.
No, way smarter than us. They have made rough mornings a thing of the past for anybody over 30 who likes to have a couple drinks.
Listen, have your pre-alcohol before you have your espresso martini. You'll thank me the next day. So go to zbiotics.com/think to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use Think at checkout.
Zbiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. We love that.
Remember to head to zbiotics.com/think and use the code THINK at checkout for 15% off.
Don't forget to drink responsibly because we love you.
And we're judging.
Nels explains that one of John's ex-girlfriends used to come over, unannounced, and a little bit more than would make any average person comfortable.
Yeah.
One day she comes over, and Sherry answers the door. And she's like, hey, John promised he would wax my skis. And Sherry's like, you promised to wax your ex-girlfriend's skis? John, that's really weird. And John was like, oh my God, you are so embarrassing. There is nothing going on with me and my ex. It is totally normal that my ex would bring over her skis for me to wax. Everybody does major laborious favors for their ex. Why are you acting crazy? Nels does not like any of this behavior.
Well, also, wax my skis sounds like a euphemism. Hi, John promised to wax my skis. Like sex? No. I actually brought skis. These are skis.
I want to hit the slopes in this winter and I need them. I need a good wax up. But still, very odd behavior. Put a pin in that.
Well, a little bit later, the ex comes back to get her freshly waxed skis, and Sherry is like, okay, great, take your skis, and bitch, don't ever come back here. You are weird, you are inappropriate. And John butted in to tell his ex, hey, sorry about that, not sure why my wife is acting weird. Here's your skis, I buffed them real good, and good luck on those slopes. Well, Sherry was fucking pissed, because it's like, I am the one who shares this house with you. In fact, I own this place. You moved in with me.
It's just not appropriate. And she came over unannounced. It's just not appropriate. You all want to talk or text or email. You're not doing favors for your ex. It's inappropriate.
Yeah, it is totally inappropriate. And Sherry was livid. And she's like, how fucking dare you? John says, there's nothing going on. Why are you being all weird? Imagine. I'd be like, you know what? You're so right. I don't mind. Just like, I guess you won't mind that my ex-boyfriend who has no gag reflex is coming over and I'm going to help him ice my cupcakes. Oh yeah, that's a little different, isn't it, John? You didn't like that. Oh no, no, it's not a euphemism. It's not, he's going to, I'm gonna ice his cupcakes. Does this change different? Is this different for you now? The fuck?
Do you want to ice my cupcakes?
I feel like I've already iced your cupcakes in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, start a rumor. We get a little backstory on John.
Born in Eugene, Oregon in September of 1958, John Rutten is outgoing, good-looking, and athletic. He plays basketball at UCLA and graduates with an engineering degree in 1982.
put a pin in that. That'll come in later. During that time is when he met Sherry. Sherry went to another school, but more on that later. So Nels is continuing to press for the investigation of his daughter's murder. And a year after this all happens, there is no movement. And he's like, you know what? I know some people. I'm going to hold a press conference. Well, he does. And he offers a $10,000 reward for the capture of whoever killed his daughter.
Yeah. And here's the thing about John. Husband John was so grief-stricken, he quit his job and he moved away. But Sherry's dad, Nels, was all,
wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you.
And wait, he did. And posing the most important question, have you looked into the ex-girlfriend, Stephanie?
Ooh. You all, hold on to your Grand Tetons. We're fast forwarding to 2004. Now, the good thing about having a half hour show is that they cut out all the fluff and they're just giving you just the information. The bad thing about having a half hour show is, why are we opening this case 20 years later? Not that I don't want them to, but this is LA. Stuff happens all the time. But thank God they did, because there have been major advancements in DNA technology. So the cold case department at the LAPD decides that they're going to test the saliva from the wound inside Sherry's arm. Remember, she was bitten. And a big question that they had at the time was like, who bites? What happened that she got bitten? So they're going to test that saliva in her arm. Well, that's not exactly what Maureen says.
A new team of investigators decide to test the saliva sample from within the wound in Sherry's arm.
Oh,
I resent the fact that you're making fun of the way she says I don't know how else you would say but what do you call an arm, Blue Eyes?
An arm.
An arm.
An arm. Arm.
What are you hearing that I'm not hearing, Blue Eyes, huh?
I don't know what you're saying, but you know what, Sherry? I've learned not to argue with you because
name's Sharon. Sherry is the one who I understand completely. Clearly, you don't understand anything.
I thought I'd give you a little nickname. You know, truly, Sharon, I am terrified of you. I'm not terrified of much, but I'm terrified of you. You and the Kool-Aid Man.
I'm just saying, you all on this, what is this radio show? You all on this radio show, take your time to really point out when people are pronouncing things wrong. You guys aren't so great yourself. You should read your feckin' Apple reviews sometime, all right? Yeah, I've written 44 of them, but it doesn't matter. You're not as good as you think you are. All right, I gotta go to the gym. It's arm day.
I appreciate you keeping us humble.
Criminologist Jennifer Butterworth reopens the cold case, hoping to use new DNA testing techniques.
Jennifer Butterworth, terrible last name. And she's like, let's get these tests going, right? So here's the thing. All the samples, they're gone. In fact, most of the evidence is missing. Now, it says someone checked them out in 1993.
Yeah, they said checked out. What is this, a fucking library book? Like,
I thought
are you
the
there,
same
God,
thing.
It's me DNA? What the fuck? It's in like the Judy Blume section? Who, you checked out the DNA? Why did they say that?
Yeah, no, it is a strange thing. But what's crazy is that someone checked them out in 1993 and never put them back. Now, that saliva sample, it hadn't been checked out. They just couldn't find it. Well, Jennifer said, I'm going to find that sample or my last name isn't Butterworth. So those types of samples are typically frozen. So she's digging through these freezers, determined to find it. And finally, she stumbles onto a small envelope that simply says Rasmussen on it. And it was shoved in the back. And inside, she finds that missing swab.
Which is crazy. It was just like a rogue envelope back there. It's wild that she found it. So now they have a couple of options, right? They have the burglar gone wrong theory. Maybe John had something to do with it. But remember Dad Nels was like, hey, did you look into John's ex-girlfriend, Stephanie? So they show us a picture of reenactment Stephanie. And honestly, I truly had no idea that Kristen Wiig got her start during reenactment acting. But Kristen Wiig is here, you all. Can somebody get her agent on the phone? Because I had no idea.
Congrats.
Because remember, she exhibited all that weird behavior, right? Like, she couldn't go to Dick's Sporting Goods and get her skis waxed.
Yeah.
That's Stephanie. So now they have the swab and they have better DNA technology. So can they solve this cold case? So they test the saliva from that rogue envelope found in the back of the freezer from the bite mark. But the only thing that they can tell through the database is that is the DNA of a woman.
Yep.
This information stuns detectives. The police have been focused on two male suspects, and now they find out it was a woman all along. This is a huge break in the case.
And guess what they do with this information? Nothing.
Nothing.
Not
nothing.
A goddamn thing. They file that sucker away and they don't do shit about it for another 5 years. All I can think is that there must have been a shift in the department or some sort of major case that like distracted everyone. I have no idea.
I mean, to be fair, it is the LAPD. They're like, we got gang wars. We have the crack epidemic. We're a little bit busy to solve this cold case. Like, of course we want this case solved, but you're right. Something probably diverted their attention because they were like, oh my God, it's a woman? Weird. What do we do? I don't know. Let's put it back in the freezer and go to Chili's. Joey, guess what?
What?
We have a new sponsor. Acorns is here, and I want to tell you all about it. Acorns is an investing app. Okay, before you fast forward, before you just think this doesn't pertain to you, it totally does. Now, it's the beginning of the year. Everyone always makes a bunch of resolutions that they're never going to keep, but I'm sure if you made one of them would be to save money. You know, that's one of my favorite hobbies. I love couponing. I love saving money, tracking money, but it can be really daunting. And also, who does resolutions? They say like 8% of people stick with their resolutions. But with Acorn, you can lock in years and years of healthy money habits in like 5 minutes. I promise, they make it so easy.
Yeah, you don't have to be an expert because Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your specific money goals. And guess what? You don't have to be rich. You don't need to be a Rockefeller. Acorn lets you invest with the spare money you've got right now. So you can start with $5 or even just spare change. Spare change?
I get it. Whenever I hear the word investing, I think stocks, I think bonds, I think things that do not pertain to me. But I promise you, just take a look at Acorns and it will all seem so much less daunting. And then you could be a couponer just like me. So head to acorns.com/think, or you can just download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today.
Paid on client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/think.
So now it's 2009, 23 years after poor Sherry is murdered, and there has been no justice for this poor woman's tragic murder.
Well, the case is reopened by two new cold case detectives, and they see the findings about Sherry's attacker being a woman. And there are two suspects listed. One was a coworker with whom Sherry had argued openly in the weeks leading up to her death, and also John ex-girlfriend Stephanie. Well, guess what these cold case investigators find added to the file as evidence? A small handwritten note that simply says,
she was a police officer.
Long forgotten evidence and a stray DNA sample have convinced police that Sherry Rasmussen was killed 20 years ago by a female police officer, Stephanie Lazarus.
That shit's wild.
And so they also learn about some other weird behavior that Stephanie had exhibited. She had shown up at Sherry's work. She showed up with the weird skis. Like, this was sort of a habit. And so now they suspect Stephanie. And they're more than suspect her. They're like, we think Officer Stephanie Lazarus murdered Sherry.
Now, here's a little backstory on her. Stephanie attended UCLA, where she met John. They became friends, and they dated. Eventually, she joins the police academy, and by 1983, she joined the LAPD. And then a little later on, Stephanie learns John is engaged to another woman, and she is distraught.
over it. So who does she tell? John's mother. Oh, yes. She wrote a letter to John's mama saying, I love John and I'll never understand why John did this. Call Jesus. Don't call me. I pushed the man out of my vagina and made sure he didn't die for 18 years. My job is done. My work here is done. This is on him. Write him a 4-page letter, Aaliyah, not me.
And like I said, we learned that Kristen Wiig had shown up at Sherry's house many times, and she showed up in uniform. Of course, the uniform is an oversized banana Republic shirt with a black tie and a badge from Party City. You're not going to convince me that's not Kristen Wiig and that is the worst costume ever. So of course, Sherry is very intimidated by this. She's like, John, Kristen Wiig showed up in an oversized Banana Republic shirt and she's got a gun. I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, she showed up in my office like an extra in Flashdance. What the fuck is going on? Well, something that is also a huge red flag is Sherry had been shot with a .38 caliber. Stephanie owned a .38 caliber that she reported as stolen just a few days after Sherry's death. So these new investigators are like, okay, let's say a cop was going to commit this crime. She would certainly know what to do and what not to do. She'd been to the condo several times. She knew John's schedule. So they're thinking Stephanie waited for John to leave.
Right. So their original working theory was whoever the burglar was probably met Sherry downstairs. But all of these years later, these down bitch cold case detectives were like, I don't think that's how it happened. I think you guys opened and shut this a little too fast. Because when young 17-year-old John reenactment John came to the house, he noticed broken glass in the driveway. Well, that broken glass came from the second story sliding door where there was a stray bullet hole. That means the burglar was upstairs. So what these new cold case detectives find out, they're like, you guys didn't look into this very well. Stephanie had to have snuck into the home, gone upstairs, tried to shoot Sherry and missed, which would account for the stray bullet and the glass in the driveway. And then they surmised that Sherry probably ran for her life and ran downstairs and hit the panic button at some point, because remember, the panic button had blood on it. So something happened and then she hit the panic button. But at some point, the assailant was absolutely upstairs.
So what they think happened is that these two started tussling and Sherry somehow got the gun out of Stephanie's hand, right? And then Sherry put Stephanie in a headlock. Well, while she has her in a headlock, Stephanie then bites Sherry's forearm, right? So Sherry lets go, obviously in pain. That's when Stephanie grabs a vase where she breaks it over Sherry's head. I'm sure Sherry was very disoriented, covering her face, covering her head. That's when Stephanie grabs the gun, grabs a nearby blanket, puts it over the barrel to muffle the noise, and shoots Sherry 3 times. Listen, if Sherry got hit in the head with that heavy vase, I'm sure she was totally disoriented, and that's why she couldn't run away. Giving Stephanie time to wrap up the gun in a blanket and shoot her.
Now she needs to stage the scene. She stacks electronics on the stairs in order to make it look like a burglary gone wrong.
Well, something else they missed in the original investigation, which the down bitch aughts cold case detectives found out, they were like, did anyone want to talk about the bloody glove print that was found on the electronics? Remember, the electronics were stacked at the foot of the stairs, but never taken. And there was a glove mark with blood. That blood was Sherry's blood. So obviously they come to the conclusion that stuff had to have been moved after Sherry was murdered because it was her blood. So all of this supports a staged burglary.
Yep. And remember how the only thing missing from Sherry and John's house was the wedding certificate? Yeah, Stephanie probably took that because she's a cunt. So now the detectives want to get a DNA sample from Stephanie to test their theory. They're not about to ask her for it, so they got a paper cup she'd been sipping on and tested that. And guess what? It was a perfect match. Now they want to ask her some questions, but they're like, one, this person is insane, and two, this person is violent. How do we get her gun before questioning her? Well, they say, hey, Stephanie, good to see you. Listen, there's been an art gallery heist, and you are the only one we think should question this suspect. Oh, really, me? I feel like there's like 100 people who could question him. No, it's you! Only you. You have the power to get the answers we seek. You must do this, Stephanie. It is your job and your duty. Did you say duty? Duty. Duty with a T. Okay, I will do this. It is my duty.
Thank you, Stephanie. By the way, we need your gun before you go in and speak with them because you can't be armed in the interrogation room. And she's like, yeah, no problem. Voila, they got the gun.
I love how they have to stage this whole scene because they're terrified of Kristen Wiig. Like, you all are so terrified of this woman. Isn't that a clue?
Yeah.
So we see the actual video of them questioning her.
Do you know John Rutten?
Rutten. Oh, yeah, I went to school with him.
You did?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, bitch, John Rutten, you all went to UCLA, you had a love affair, he waxed your skis and did the euphemism stuff. Yeah, John Rutten.
When they ask about John's former wife, Sherry.
Do you know who she was or anything?
Well, I...
Stephanie becomes evasive.
God, it's been a long time ago.
At first she denies ever having met Sherry. Then she allows she might have, perhaps even more than once.
Well, we may have, I may have seen her at his apartment, you know, geez, how many years ago is that?
She is playing this, oh my gosh, I don't know, Cher, you know, people come and go so quickly these days. I may have, I think I had my skis waxed one time, I don't know, it's just, this memory.
No, the real thing I only know about Sherry is it's a song by Steve Perry, great song, you know, have you listened to it? You should listen to it. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then as this interrogation moves on, she gets super defensive because she's like, are you blaming me? Are you blaming me for her murder? Are you implicating, tell me now, are you implicating, are you insinuating it's me? And then eventually she's like, I'm leaving. And they're like, well, you know what, Stephanie? All right, well, you're free to go. Thank you for your time, Stephanie. Just kidding, you're under arrest. We never miss the bad guys here.
We got him, boy. Good job, Wadsworth.
Joey, guess who's back?
Who?
Miracle Maid. We understand that your nighttime bedroom temperature impacts your sleep quality, and that's why Miracle Maid is here, to help you not wake up too hot or too cold.
Miracle Maid sheets are inspired by NASA. They use silver-infused fabrics that are temperature-regulating so you can sleep at the perfect temperature. I'm not trying to sweat all night. I'm not trying to get the shivers. I just want to sleep.
I don't really have a temperature problem when I sleep because, you know, I sleep at a nice balmy 75 degrees every night. But these sheets are infused with that silver, and that silver also prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. Do you know that your bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat? Sorry, someone had to say it. I apologize.
Also, did we mention that they are luxurious? They truly are nicer than sheets you would find at some 5-star hotels. Upgrade your sleep this year.
Go to trymiracle.com/thinknot to try Miracle Maid sheets today.
And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%.
And if you use our promo code ThinkNot at checkout, you'll get a free 3-piece towel set and save an extra 20%.
Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund.
Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Maid.
Go to trymiracle.com/thinknot and use the code ThinkNot to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/thinknot to treat yourself.
Thank you, Miracle Maid, for sponsoring this episode.
And making it comfy in my 75-degree luxury. Remember, this happened in 1986.
Crazy.
Stephanie Lazarus is taken for trial for murder. So with everything pointing to Stephanie, the timeline, her showing up all those places, and the DNA evidence, what on earth could the defense for her not guilty plea be? And they were like, she's a police officer with an impeccable record. Also, DNA evidence is flawed. And John actually speaks out in court.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak during this hearing. And the fact that Sherry's death occurred because she met and married me brings me to my knees.
And actually, finding out that he slept with Stephanie while he was engaged to Sherry, to me, explains a lot about why he was trying to defend Stephanie when she would show up at the house, because mm-hmm. he was terrified. He probably knew she was a ticking time bomb and yeah. that he never should have slept with her because she probably couldn't let him go. And he's like, she could ruin my life at any moment, so I have to play Mr. Nice Guy.
Well, not in that clip. He also had sex with Stephanie 3 years after the murder. So Stephanie was lingering.
Yeah. Well, on March 9th, 2012, Stephanie is found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to 27 years to life. Stephanie is serving her time in the California Institute for Women in Corona, and she is eligible for parole in 2039. Poor Sherry.
You all, that is not the end of the story. I went in deep.
I knew it wouldn't be.
I just want to say, this isn't my opinion. This is the opinion of many people online and the cold case investigators who went back all those years later. They kind of just open and shut this case. They were like, this is a burglary, shut it. They really didn't do much for this poor woman, and it would not have gotten a second look because the family kept calling the LAPD, as we all would if it happened to one of our loved ones, and the LAPD would put them on hold, hang up on them, and they were like, this is LA in the 80s. We don't have time for you, which I get it, but this is this person's pride and joy. It's their daughter. It's yep. their sister. It's their friend. It's their wife. They did well, yeah. not do anything. And that is not me saying that. They're basically like, we got people, you know, selling crack on the street. Sorry about your daughter. They were very callous towards the family. Even Jennifer yeah. Butterworth, tragic name, who was the one who discovered the DNA, even she went to her supervisor, and the supervisor was like, no, we looked into everything. And poor Jennifer was like, but it's a female. And remember that whole harassing and stalking bit? Her superior said, oh yeah, you mean the LAPD detective? Yeah, no, wasn't her. She wasn't part of this. And Jennifer was even just brushed aside. So when they reopened this case in 2009, I guess it was like a slow year for crime or whatever, I want to acknowledge the two officers that reopened this case because they just found it incomplete was Officer James Natal and Pete Barba. They were the ones who were like, we should look into this. This was not done very well. They were the ones who were like, why didn't anyone talk about the bloody glove print on the electronics? Okay? So I just want to say that Nels and those guys are the only reason that this family has closure. Their names were not mentioned in the episode, so I wanted to give them their flowers. So a couple of things. Stephanie Lazarus, remember how you said that she reported that gun stolen? Yeah. She did. 11 days after the murder to the Santa Monica Police Department. Why didn't she report it to the police department she literally worked at? So they assumed that she had thrown the gun off the Santa Monica pier and was like, hey, my gun is gone. Because you're in the police department all the time. Just go say your gun was stolen. All right. So there's more. I want to go to her appeal hearing. Stephanie finally admitted to her crime and accepted responsibility for the murder of Sherry in November 2023. She claimed she never intended to kill Sherry. She just went there to confront her and talk to her. So she appealed to the parole board with that narrative in late 2023. She was like, listen, I've done 15 years. You guys got it all wrong. This was unintentional. And so the parole committee was like, all right, here's this 64-year-old woman. She was convicted of murder. I think, you know, she was given 27 to life, but like, we can let her out after 15 years. So the commissioner who oversaw that parole hearing determined that Stephanie Lazarus seemed remorseful and that she wouldn't pose a risk if she was released. Well, Sherry's family was like, we waited 30 years for a conviction and you're not going to make her do her full time? Abso-fucking-lutely not. So they made such a stink, and Greg Stearns, who's now a retired LAPD detective, also contested the claims. He said, quote, Stephanie Lazarus stalked her victim, chose a time and place when she knew she would have the victim alone. She bought cordage to bind her, not mentioned in the episode, used an improvised suppressor to execute her, staged a burglary, and disposed of the murder weapon and filed a false police report with an outside agency to explain the absence of that weapon. Those are not the hallmarks of a youthful offense. Those are the hallmarks of criminal sophistication and maturity. Drag her, Greg Stearns.
Wow.
Okay, but this parole board has already put up her parole, right? In the state of California, all parole decisions that become final are subject to review by the governor, which of course, 2023, was Gavin Newsom. And the governor has 30 days to review that decision, and then he can choose to take no action and the parole happens, or he can choose to reverse it. This is what Gavin Newsom said. Quote, Lazarus had an excellent disciplinary record as a prisoner and sought to improve herself. Yet, she evaded justice for more than two decades in a 1986 murder of Sherry Rasmussen and didn't appear to begin taking full accountability for the murder until she was finally caught and had the option for parole. So, in 2023, they petitioned and agreed to her parole, and on October 2nd, 2024, her parole was rescinded. That bitch is still in jail.
Wow.
And it just goes to show you, if you create enough of a stink, like, speak up. That family spoke up. They made some noise, because it's true. She wasn't just like someone, it was an accident. I didn't mean for this to happen. No, bitch, you are a cold-blooded killer and you are going to sit in jail for the murder of that poor young woman.
Wow. Yeah, thank God. And I'm glad. You know, that is a long time to wait for justice for your loved one to even consider letting her out.
And then just to get 15 years, like half of the sentence?
No.
That's preposterous.
No.
So all the cold case detectives that went back and went to bat for the family, Gavin Newsom, all, and fuck that parole board.
Yeah.
It was a wild, wild ending. I cut out some of it. There was a lot of back and forth with the parole board. There were people that were like, she was a cop. No, she's a murderer. She murdered someone. She took someone's life. She took someone's husband. She took someone's child. And also,
yeah,
Papa Nels, you are a down bitch. He never
yeah,
stopped
he is.
Fighting for justice. Say something funny.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This 17-year-old looking John reenactment actor, if they ever do a reboot of Charlie's Angels, he is a shoe-in for the thin, creepy man who screams when he gets a haircut by a nun. That is very niche.
Did that happen?
Yes, just play the rollout. Roll the music. This is it's niche.
Listen, never lose hope. Justice can be found 30 years later. We have so many cold cases and all of our back episodes have disappeared. This gives me so much hope.
Me too.
You can figure shit out if you are loud enough. Make some noise. I am devastated for this family, but I love that they never gave up 30 years later. That is amazing. You all, the show is called Killer in Plain Sight if you want to check it out. Please follow us on social media. That is the best way you can support us, on Instagram, on our Facebook group. Join in on the fun. Please feel free to tag us anytime you post anything about us or brag on us. And if you're feeling lucky, please give us a 5-star review on Amazon, Spotify, Apple, all three. And if you don't have anything nice to say, go over to Crimes of the Century. Amber Hunt, listen, she's a mouthy one. I don't know what her attitude is. I'm just kidding. Please, that is the best way you can support all your creators, giving us reviews and sharing our content. We really, really appreciate it.
That's right. And don't forget, if you want to get a little bonus material or dive more into the community, you can join us over on our Patreon. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/ithinknot, where you can find all kinds of buffoonery to partake in, right?
Oh, the buffoonery is buffooning. Until next time, I love you, Joey.
I love you, Joey Ellen Marsh, and I love you, Dibby Simich.
I love you, dumb bitches.
Bye. Bye. I got nothing.
Yeah, what is this? DNA in the attic? Okay, sorry. I was going for flowers in the attic. It doesn't quite work. Never mind. Cut it. Disgusting. That is a niche reference. Please tell me you know it.
No.
Which one of you doesn't know how to flush the toilet after you've taken a shite? No?
Mm-mm.
Okay, great.
Are we too tired to suck anymore? I'm too tired. Just put it on my tongue.
Hot. I am just drinking this Schlitz malt liquor. No, wait, I can do better. What was those wine coolers?
Zima?
No, those were...
Strawberry Boone? Strawberry Hill?
What were those old wine coolers from the 80s brands? What the English did I just use? Your hand looks heavy. Can I hold it for you?
Sure.
Great.
Is that your pickup line, Joey?
I don't know, wait.